Even where people are clear about what we're talking about, the execution methodology that's used for digital transformation is more related to traditional IT project management than the methodology that's needed when you're trying to rewire things entirely, you know, rewire culture, rewire people, rewire learning systems, and of course, you know, rewire technology as well.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast, the most exciting place that you could possibly be at this moment. And I'm here with my co-host, Tiffany Snyder.
Hello.
Glad to have you here today.
Thanks.
And our guest, Tony Saldana. Welcome, Tony.
Thank you, Brad and Tiffany. Delighted to join you guys.
Tony Saldana is a globally recognized expert and thought leader in global business services and information technology. He ran Procter & Gamble's famed multi-million dollar GBS and IT operations in every region across the world during a 27-year career there. Saldana has over three decades of international business expertise in the United States, Europe, and Asia. He was named on Computer World's Premier 100 IT Professionals list in 2013. Saldana's experiences include GBS design and operations, CIO positions, acquisitions and divestitures, outsourcing, disruptive innovations, and the creation of new business models. Saldana is currently president of Transformant, a consulting organization that advises over 20 Fortune 100 companies around the world in digital transformation and global business services. He is also a founder of two blockchain and AI companies and an advisor to venture capital companies. His book, Why Digital Transformations Fail, was released globally in July 2019 and ranked number one on Amazon's new releases for organizational change, listed on publisher Barrett Kohler's bestsellers for July 2019, and recommended by various publishing forums like CEO Reads, BookPal, CEO Library, and others. Forbes contributor Michelle Greenwald called it the best book ever that you've yet to read. We are pleased to have Tony Saldana with us today on Digital to Learn. We like to begin with some kind of ridiculous questions just to give our audience, and we're assuming that our audience is in the millions of people listening right now. Why are you laughing? That wasn't a joke.
Oh, no, I was laughing at just millions. I mean, come on, you know, you're being I thought it was billions with a B.
I like this guy. So we're going to ask you some questions just to give the audience a chance to get acquainted with Tony. So Tiffany, why don't you start us out?
Yeah, we're going to make some people mad right now, I think. What is something that everyone looks stupid doing?
Oh, this one's easy. It is basically, putting on your pajamas.
Ah, very good.
There is absolutely no smooth way to do that.
Okay, next question. What piece of art, book, music, movie, etc., has most influenced the person you are today?
I think that would absolutely have to be the book and the movie on Gandhi. So, just for your audience's context. So I'm originally from India. I've lived in the U.S. for the last 20 years. But, kind of growing up, you read about Gandhi, the man and the hero, you know, stuff like that in the school books. But yeah, it wasn't until I actually read the book and saw the movie that I became aware that this is a much more complicated person, not the godlike person, which is what, you know, as a kid, you know, you're brought up to believe in, right? Yeah. And still at the end of that, I mean, you know, what you find out is that, you know, we can all be human, we can all have our frailties, and yet, you know, we could be the most inspiring person on earth. And so I think you start to accept yourself for who you are.
That is a fascinating insight.
Yeah. All right. The next question, and it might be related to that answer. I'm not sure. What's the single best piece of advice you ever received?
So the single best piece of advice I received was actually at work when I worked for 27 years at Procter & Gamble. But, you know, my first manager there basically had a very simple piece of advice, which is, you know, we all have our strengths. We all have our opportunities. You know, you do better by focusing on your strengths than trying to correct every piece of failing that you have. Mm. And that advice has stood me in good stead.
Oh. That is wonderful advice. I think we all could pay attention to that. Okay, I imagine you're a pretty busy guy. When I look at your resume and all the things you've done and you're doing, I imagine you're pretty busy. So
I just have clones. That's right.
Well, and before we leave today, you're going to tell us how to do that.
Yeah.
But what's a hobby that you've always wanted to develop but just haven't had the time to do?
So that one is play the guitar. I actually took 2 years of lessons in my 20s. So just a, you know, further background, I actually come from a fairly musical family. My father and uncle, they essentially had a jazz and swing band in Calcutta in the 50s and 60s. So the musical gene must have skipped a generation because none of our generation essentially of any good at it. But my daughter is a classical pianist. My nephew is actually the music director of the Indian Navy. So I always had this thing of, you know, I got to keep up, man. You know, I'm starting to get bad, but never got around to it. I took, like I said, 2 years of lessons. But, you know, as you know, that's not enough. So
if there was a song that you could play with flawlessly on the guitar, what would that be?
Oh, I tried very, very hard. Hotel California.
Okay.
Nowhere near close to perfect.
All right. What's one skill that you think everyone should have?
I think the one skill everybody should absolutely have is to make, you know, really, really good scrambled eggs. It's one of those pet peeves of mine. This should be relatively easy, right? I mean, even if you look at the name, it is eggs and it is scrambled there. But the variety of scrambled eggs variations that you come across is completely unforgivable.
So I would assume that you have a high level of proficiency in that area. Is there a scrambled egg advice that you could give to our audience? Something that absolutely has to happen?
I think my recipe, and I know, you know, I'm going to get critique from your billions of listeners for this, is to actually not scramble the egg until, let it cook first and scramble it at the end, you know, kind of break it up at the last minute.
Interesting. Do you add milk or some other substance to your eggs or just straight up eggs?
I add several things. You know, my scrambled eggs are barely recognizable as eggs by the time I'm done. But it will typically have, you know, things like onions, and it'll have, you know, some vegetables, some cheese. I actually don't put milk. I've had it with and without, but, you know, my normal recipe is without.
The fact that you said scrambled eggs have a recipe means I already failed. I'm sorry, excuse me, what? There's a recipe?
I would have failed in my book if I didn't come with the mindset that there is a, you know, a good way to do everything, which is really
So could we anticipate maybe a book coming out in the future, Why Scrambled Eggs Fail?
You know, that's a great idea. Maybe the three of us should collaborate on this one. That'll be fun.
I think we should maybe have a scrambled eggs podcast. It's a spinoff of the show. It's been fascinating. I mean, all of the guests we've had are thoroughly thought leaders in the field of technology and teaching and learning. But it's also been so fascinating to find out other aspects of their lives, like scrambled eggs, that never would have anticipated. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're very welcome. You know, we all have multiple facets. You know, some of them maybe not as accomplished, you know, i.e. guitar as others, but we try.
Okay. Well, as we mentioned in our introduction, Tony is the author of the excellent book, Why Technologies Fail. And so we're going to dig into that a little bit and some of his insights on the challenges of integrating technology into organizations. So Tiffany, why don't you start us off?
Well, to bring our listeners up to speed, we said why scrambled eggs fail because the name of this book is Why Digital Transformations Fail. So we're going to move forward with some questions about the book and about your career. In the book, you say that as many as 70% of all digital transformations fail. The surprising answer to why digital transformations fail is a lack of discipline in defining and executing the right steps for digital transformations to take off and stay ahead. Well, that quote resonated with us, and we would love for you to unpack that a bit more for us if you could.
That's a great question, Tiffany. When I first came across that statistic, which originally kind of goes back to IDC and then, you know, Harvard and others have done their own studies as well, I was floored because digital transformation is a $2 trillion with a T industry. And any industry that can proudly claim to have a 30% success rate, i.e. 70% failure, you know, there's something really wrong, right? As is the case with most statistics, my first impression was, well, you know, that can't be true, so this is wrong. But it is, because I think if you define digital transformation success correctly, then 70% of them do fail. And so here's the way I have come around to realizing what the root cause is, as well as, you know, what people can do about it, right? So firstly, 70% of digital transformations fail for the simple reason of discipline, as I said. But, you know, there are two parts to the discipline. One is goal setting, and the second is execution, right? So goal setting. Part of the research for my book, while I was still with Procter & Gamble, I had the opportunity to talk with about 100 different executives, you know, all across the industry, venture capitalists, consultants, you know, so on and so forth, CEOs. And among other things, I asked them a simple question: what does digital transformation mean to you? And I got a variety of answers, everything from, oh, don't worry about it, it's all hype. You know, we used to have digital watches in the 1970s. Digital has been around for a long time. All the way to the other spectrum, end of the spectrum, which is, oh, it's that thing that Elon Musk keeps talking about, you know, the robots that are coming for us. So clearly, I think, you know, you have a variety. And, you know, lesson number one in anything, you know, if people are not really clear of what they're talking about, they're not going to succeed at it, right? And then the second is execution. Even where people are clear about what we're talking about, the execution methodology that's used for digital transformation is more related to traditional IT project management than the methodology that's needed when you're trying to rewire things entirely, you know, rewire culture, rewire people, rewire learning systems, and of course, you know, rewire technology as well. And I know we'll get a little deeper into both parts, you know, what is the right definition of digital transformation and how do you do that? How do you execute it correctly? But at, you know, at a very summary level, that's basically why digital transformations fail.
So in that process then, do we overestimate the power of the technology or underestimate the people element or both?
It is definitely both. The first part of your question, which is, do we overestimate the power of technology? It's absolutely right on. Because we tend to think that the answer to anything that we're trying to do is technology, right? So, you know, I know this is going to sound maybe too simplistic, but, you know, quite honestly, in a lot of the work that I do now in my company as an advisor to, you know, 20 of the Fortune 100 companies, I get called in, you know, to some of the senior leader connections because, you know, they've read in a magazine about blockchain or the Internet of Things or AI, and they feel this pressure from their board and from their shareholders to digitize, right? And so the going in assumption is that, okay, so you've got something, a product that I can use that's going to solve all of my problems, right? When they hear me talk about, you do not need a digital strategy. Don't pay me. Don't call me to do your digital strategy. What you need is a business strategy. And what you need is the ability to figure out, you know, what are the specific pieces of that business strategy you need technology for. So I'm going to not talk to you about technology. I'm going to first talk to you about your own business and your business strategy and, you know, how you're winning in the current third industrial revolution era and how you could fail in the fourth industrial revolution because your business model is wrong. They kind of get upset because I'm not giving them the answer to what AI tool to use. But that's one. And then secondly, of course, real digital transformation, which is rewiring your people, your systems, your products to succeed in the fourth industrial revolution, basically means you have to change the DNA of your people. And most digital transformation projects don't even think of the people element until it's too late.
So when you get called into one of these companies, do they call you in to say, hey, we're thinking about doing this? Or do they call you in when they say, we started to do this, but we really don't know how to do it?
It could be either. And I think more often than not, at this point in time, what's happened is most companies, most boards, most CEOs have completely understood the imperative to transform. Digitally, I mean. They have maybe even invested time, money, they've maybe set up a digital officer, and they're starting to get a little concerned because they're not seeing the results, right? They're seeing anecdotal successes. So more often than not, I get called in to say, okay, so why? What are we missing, right? You know, that's when I kind of take them back and say, this is going to sound like the Alice in Wonderland conversation, the one where, you know, Alice asks the Cheshire Cat, you know, which way should I go? And the Cheshire Cat says, well, it depends on where you want to go to. And she says, I don't care. The cat says, well, that's fine. You know, in that case, it doesn't matter which way you go. So that's typically the conversation that happens at that point in time, which is when I go in and talk about, you know, the third and the fourth industrial revolution and business strategy and business models. And very quickly, I think we collectively realize that, again, you know, the answer to that question isn't digital technologies. The answer to the question is plain and simple business strategy, which is, you know, what element. So digital transformation has three elements. It's either digital business models. So these days you sell omnichannel or online, not just, you know, brick and mortar retail, just to use that example as a digital business model. The other one is a digital product. So smart cars, not cars, you know, smart toothbrushes, not toothbrushes. And the third is digital business process model. So, you know, don't just automate your travel and expenses. Ask yourself the question why you should have travel and expenses, right? So it's all of those three, but these are all means to an end. They have to be in support of something, which is really where we start the conversation most often.
Excellent. So in your book, you describe the elements of disruption empowerment, and those being MTP, air cover, skin in the game, and feeder. Could you illuminate us on those four elements of disruption empowerment?
Yes, massive transformative purpose. To give credit where credit is due, I picked up from an amazing guy, Salim Ismail, who used to be dean of Singularity University. You may be familiar with Singularity. They're probably the world's foremost authorities on exponential technologies. And in his book, and I had also hired him while I was at Procter & Gamble to advise us to create the disruptive organization for business processes. So I came and talked about the massive transformative purpose. And what it is there has to be a higher goal than, you know, just, I want to upgrade to SAP S/4HANA, you know, or something like that. Right? Or I want to use analytics. So his book talks about in most exponential or new age companies, there's always a higher purpose, a higher goal. You know, for Google, it was organize the world's information, right? Which is, you know, several levels higher than, you know, run a cloud company or, you know, whatever it is, right? So when you're trying to set up and empower a team, you have to have them think about what they're trying to do in broader terms than we are an innovation organization that you've chartered to disrupt a few things, right? And if they don't, then they're going to be limited to, again, tactical projects and technology, you know, not the bigger purpose. So then from there, we move on to kind of air cover, which is, You know, here's the issue with most disruptive innovation organizations. To start with, innovation organizations, especially disruptive ones, don't really have a very strong equity because they are related to, or they're equated to, you know, people that do cool stuff but are never accountable for anything, right, in terms of outcomes. And so part of your role as a leader, if you are, you know, chartering one such team, is to essentially be very, very clear about how you are going to provide clarity in terms of accountability and outcomes. But then once you do that, you're actually going to protect them from all of the slings and arrows that come from all over the organization saying, why are we wasting money, you know, thinking mm-hmm. about things that are 5 years out when, you know, we have payroll that, you know, ran into an error today, you know, that kind of stuff. So that's what I mean by the air cover. Another thing that helps is speed. Most disruptive organizations, because by design, they deal with, you know, future technologies, they may see a lot of investment happen in themselves and not have anything to show, you know, for the next year or two or 5 years, you know, so on and mm-hmm. so forth. And that's absolutely a no-no. So in the methodology in my book, I talk about how disruptive innovation, unless you happen to be in the technology industry, is really about use cases. And your job is not to invent everything from scratch, but to find Lego blocks of what's available but not completely scaled and start using that today, right? Mm. Mm-hmm. Which essentially means that, you know, you have to essentially pick low-hanging fruit problem statements to work on, as well as low-hanging fruit initial success stories. And part of the role of a good sponsor is to bring in that organization and say, hey, I have a business problem that I think is disruptive, but there's a part of it that you could actually solve for me right now and do this. And that builds credibility that you are not just a ivory tower organization, but you know, you're an applied innovation organization. And that distinction between ivory tower, which is really the image that disruption or disruptive innovation, you know, projects in people's memory, and applied disruption, which is you're going to essentially take something that's disruptive and apply it right now and have me see results right now. That distinction is very important.
This has been an excellent episode of the Digital to Learn podcast. And we have exciting news. We're going to be bringing this guest back next week for part two. So please join us.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.